Seattle's Morning News. I'm Travis Mayfield in for Dave Ross. At my side, Colleen O'Brien. So this recent spike in violence in South King County prompting our next guest to put out a call to his fellow mayors that something has to be done. Federal Way Mayor Jim Farrell joining us this morning. Mayor, good morning. You've reached out to your fellow mayors in the South County area. And what are you doing?
Well, first, I want to say that when I reached out to my fellow mayors, several of them, including the mayors of Auburn and Kent, had actually already decided to do exactly this idea. So I think it's an idea whose time has come. I wouldn't say it was necessarily my idea. I think that all of the mayors in South King County and city administrators and police chiefs are ready to work together, lock up arms. And, I think clearly that the level of violence has just come to an unacceptable level. And I think all of us are collectively saying enough is enough. And that's why we're meeting this Friday. You know, I can only speak for Federal Way at this stage. And what I can say is that, you know, from our perspective, that we need to find strategies, a multi-pronged strategy to address this rise in violence and really link up arms with our fellow communities. Because if you think about it, all of South King County, whether Kent, Auburn, Renton, Tukwila, Des Moines, and SeaTac, so a little bit of a geography test, and Federal Way, we're well over two-thirds of a million people. And that's a big collective voice, and we need to have those voices heard.
Who is contributing to the violence and why?
Well, I think, first of all, we've got an unacceptable rise of violence with guns. We need to make sure that we get the guns out of the hands of the people committing these crimes. And that's going to really involve some intelligence sharing by our police departments. But I also think that we've got a situation in which, we've got a record all-time high 10 homicides in the city of Federal Way this year. Half of those, 5 out of those 10, we believe, and we have evidence to suggest that are what they call drug related, meaning that there's some sort of drug deal gone bad, what I refer to as a drug rip. If you talk to law enforcement professionals, where, you know, people go to a drug deal and they want to keep the drugs and the money or both. And in the process, people get shot. And in 5 of those instances in Federal Way, people have died. And so that's the kind of level of violence that is just absolutely unacceptable. And we've got a situation in the state of Washington right now where we've got de facto legalization of hard drugs like cocaine, heroin, methamphetamine, fentanyl, based on this new structure that was passed in light of the Supreme Court decision.
Okay, so you're asking, obviously, for changes, maybe at the county executive level, the county council level, the county prosecutor level, state lawmakers making changes to state law. But what can you, as the mayor of Federal Way, meeting with these other mayors, do? So what can you do? And then what could you do with your fellow mayors? Concrete action, more than just asking someone else to do something.
Absolutely. Great question. Well, first of all, I want to say that I only speak for Federal Way. I look forward to meeting with my mayors. I have some suggestions I'm going to share. I need to hear theirs. And so we're going to be talking about that. And those conversations will be ongoing. What we've done here in Federal Way is add a number of different factors. Number one, we were already at an all-time high of 137 officers budgeted. We've been filling the vacancies to get us to 137. But I just asked for and received the approval from our city council to add 13 new officers to the city of Federal Way to get us to 150, a historic high. Then what we've done is I've asked for authorization for overtime and extra patrols, what we call PROACT units, which are making sure that you show up at problem areas before the things occur. That's a big, big step. As well as extra patrols, overtime patrols on Pacific Highway, 320th, and in what we have determined to be high impact areas.
I want to ask specifically about the hiring of more police officers. Do you think you really can get to 150? I mean, we're looking at what's happening in Seattle, where officers continue to leave. They can't keep officers. My dad is a retired officer. He helped hire in Bremerton for a number of years. Just getting candidates to apply in the last 5 to 10 years has been hard. So you have the money for them. But do you think you can actually hire up to 150?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we had a couple of vacancies. Well, first of all, thank you to your father for his service to his community and to our region. I can tell you that one of the things you've got to do to recruit and retain good people is you've got to make sure you've got the requisite pay and the benefits and take home cars and those kinds of things. And that's what the budget proposal, I created room in our budget to be able to create those incentives. And, you know, I was something I'm very proud of the 19 years I spent as a prosecutor. And I really felt like I was helping people on both sides of the table. And I know that officers feel the same way. And I think we are going to fill those positions and we are committed to doing it. We should do there's really two challenges or two ways you can recruit officers. One is by laterals from other law enforcement agencies where they've already gone through the training. And the other is, you know, brand new officers, younger folks where you bring them in and they got to go through the academy. By bringing in new officers, obviously, you only have a certain number of space in each academy that goes through. So we need to make sure that we've got sufficient funding for academy classes for the entire state. But we also need a mix of laterals as well. And that sort of mix institutionally at the city is very important. But I can tell you that we will add those officers. We'll do probably about two or three per month until we get to that number, probably by mid next year.
Federal Way Mayor Jim Farrell, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Let's go.
It is time for Choke Points, brought to you by Primary Residential Mortgage. Yeah, you heard it just moments ago. We're talking about flying cars. Are they the real future of personal travel, or is this just a pipe dream? A local engineer envisions a future of on-demand electric personal air vehicles carrying us to our destinations. Meet George Jetson.
And his name today is engineer Steve Tibbetts.
Ooh.
He's Washington State engineering grad. He's got a company down in Tacoma, but I want to kind of take you through his story because this all started with him buying a small plane in 2003. He had plans to explore the Northwest using all the small runways that are dotted across the region.
My dream was to be able to throw a folding mountain bike in the back seat and fly in to the closest airport to my destination and then just ride the last mile, you know, like that. And what I found out was all the little airports that I knew about growing up have vanished.
Tibbetts says nearly 300 small airports or runways between Seattle and Portland have just disappeared. And no one's going to start using prime real estate to put down new ones. And that's when his light bulb went off. He needed to build a small, personal plane that could take off and land vertically. Something that he could land in his backyard or in the nearest cul-de-sac. Fast forward 18 years, and Tibbetts is now testing his prototype named Ziva. It has 8 propellers. It sits on its tail. The passenger gets into the enclosed vehicle from behind, punches in the destination, and
the thrust causes it to fly up, you know, vertically straight away. And then within maybe 20 to 30 seconds, it's developing enough speed where it'll transition to forward flight. And then you're flying through the air kind of like Superman.
So imagine you go up vertically, you kind of roll horizontal once it gets to a certain spot, and then you take off.
That's so cool.
You're flying like Superman. So Ziva is designed to go 50 miles on a single charge, flying at 160 miles an hour at an altitude of 1 to 2,000 feet. Now, that's what Ziva's designed to do. So far, Tibbetts and his team have only done vertical takeoff and landing testing with the vehicle tethered to the ground. But he expects to get off that tether in the next couple of weeks. Then will come that transition testing, forward flight testing. They're going to add a ballistic parachute, and then finally some passenger testing. So obviously, this isn't happening today or tomorrow. But there's no doubt in Tibbetts' mind that this is the future of personal travel.
There's always going to be healthy skepticism. But, you know, with or without Ziva, it's going to happen. I'm confident that this is a real thing and it's happening.
There are more than 100 companies pursuing and designing these electric vertical takeoff and landing vehicles. But most are focusing on larger vehicles, ones that you would kind of call air taxis. Tibbetts envisions, though, personal ownership, though he admits that it might cost you $250,000 to buy the first model.
Zoinks.
But his primary thought maybe at some point would be fleets of private or publicly owned planes that you could hire on demand, just like ride sharing.
The utopia in my mind is be able to walk to your vehicle, fly, and then walk to your destination. So there's no intermediate car access that, you know, it's going to continue to clog up the highways.
Now, I can hear everybody out there thinking, yeah, right. In the last couple of minutes, I've come up with 50 different problems with this idea. I know. And you're not wrong. I mean, this went through my head a lot. The first thing my wife asked me was, who's going to be flying these things? Because let's be honest with ourselves. We have enough trouble driving cars on the ground.
Right.
Flying our own cars in the air is probably not a good idea. And Tibbetts says, okay, I get that, but he expects Ziva and other personal air vehicles to be autonomous, using systems currently being explored by the FAA and other agencies.
There's going to be a high degree of autonomy. And there's going to be an autonomous artificial intelligent air traffic management system in every region.
So you tell your vehicle where you go, maybe punch it up on an app, you get into your personal plane, and then the AI will direct the flight computer to the closest landing area to your destination. Now, of course, I can also hear you scoffing, considering how well autonomous car testing is going on the ground. But Tibbetts says autonomy in the air is a lot easier than it is on the ground.
Having a computer recognize the difference between a mailbox and a kid on a scooter is a really hard problem. Whereas in the air, all you really need to do is recognize that there's something there and then fly around it to avoid it.
In addition to personal use, Tibbetts sees these vehicles being critical in natural disasters or emergencies. Imagine if a paramedic could jump into one of, say, a fire station, fly over all the congested traffic on I-5, and then land on the freeway right next to the accident. How much quicker would that be in getting life-saving aid to that accident? Think about the areas in Whatcom County that have been cut off by the recent flooding. You could just fly in first responders or supplies, needing only a 30-foot circle to land in. Now, the one thing I haven't really addressed, timing. How realistic is this? Tibbetts believes that this is going to be reality by 2040. That's about the same timing for getting light rail to my neighborhood in Everett. So, who are you betting on? Flying cars or light rail?
I mean, honestly, flying cars. Honestly, I mean, that's just the truth of the matter. Nothing against Sound Transit here, but I've already seen the prototypes flying in Dubai, where they're doing these taxis that you were talking about.
Yeah, and Ziva was at Dubai showing it off a couple weeks ago at the air show there, and they were getting a lot of interest. And as I said, this isn't just a couple of people. There are about 120 companies that are designing and working on this and testing this, and they think and the AI is kind of interesting, because you think about the trouble we've had with autonomous cars determining what's a pedestrian,
what's
a stop sign, what's a stoplight, what's a bike, in the air, there's none of that
right
now.
It's just if there's a thing, that's a problem.
Yeah, you just get away from the thing. So it's just, he believes that autonomy will come faster in the air than it will on the ground, which is an interesting kind of way to put the whole autonomous car thing on its head, if you think about it. But again, I'm not sure how comfortable we're going to be with a bunch of these things whizzing over our heads at 1,000 feet at 160 miles an hour. But, I mean, is this the future? Is it not? I mean, that's why we have the State Roofing text line, right?
Yeah.
888-973-5476. Are we crazy? Are these guys crazy? Or do you think this is viable? And Tibbetts and his team are on this thing. We're going to be following them. They're from Tacoma. He's from Wazoo grad. And I think, I mean, there are enough engineers in this region that are following this kind of stuff that, and it's, you know, zero footprint too, reasonably, and when it comes to carbon. So, yeah, I think it's fascinating.
Me too. I love the whole idea of flying cars, not just the George Jetson, the real reality of it.
Yeah, me too. Me
All
too.
Right. Cairo Radio News Time 6:37. Snohomish County leaders have proposed a sales tax hike to build up the county's affordable housing supply. Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott reports.
The proposal from County Executive Dave Summers and the majority of the county council is an effort to keep people from ending up on the streets, as a third of Snohomish County residents shell out over 30% of their income on housing.
In Snohomish County, for someone who makes minimum wage, they would have to work three full-time jobs to afford a two-bedroom apartment at market rate.
County's Kent Patton tells Cairo 7 TV the severe shortage of low-income or affordable housing is to blame, a struggle Chelsea knows all too well.
There is that, do I eat or do I pay my rent? It's not only do I eat, it's does my significant other eat? Does my pet eat?
The 0.1% sales tax increase could be passed before the end of the year and without a public vote under House Bill 1590, a 2019 law passed by the legislature that allows cities and counties to circumvent a public vote on tax hikes for specific purposes, namely affordable housing and mental health services. County Executive Dave Summers says it's necessary because too many of Snohomish County's residents are worried about being forced out onto the streets because they're on the losing end of the affordable housing crisis. But County Councilmember Nate Nehring had issues with the proposal and the process.
My main objection today is more on the timing. It seems to me that this tax increase proposal is being rushed and really is lacking transparency. I guess I just don't understand the reason that this needs to be rushed through and voted on right before Christmas while everyone's busy.
He argued.
I also think that the voters should have a say on this tax increase proposal. I understand that House Bill 1590 creates sort of a loophole for governments to enact these sorts of sales tax increases without going through the traditional process of going for a public vote of the people. But just because we can doesn't mean we should. And so I think if there are council members or the executive who truly believe this is a good idea, they should be willing to make that case to the voters and allow them to decide. After all, this is the voters' money we're talking about, not ours. And so I'll be preparing an amendment which would send this proposal to the ballot for a vote of the people.
Councilmember Sam Lowe also voicing opposition.
I always hear people say that this is a regressive tax, but yet when it comes time to vote on these taxes, I never hear the same people talking about regressive taxes and how it hurts the most vulnerable in our community. So I have some concerns with this.
But those who work with folks to keep them off the streets say without more low-income housing, more people will end up homeless.
You know, what are you going to choose? Are you going to choose to keep people on the street, or are you going to choose to, you know, pay a little bit more to really help people get into housing, which is a right that we all have?
The council voted 3-2 to advance the proposal to a public hearing on December 15th at 10:30 a.m., Should it pass, supporters expect it could bring in about $23 million a year and more than double the number of affordable units expected to be built in the county over the next 5 years.
It's time for your daily dose of kindness now. It's sponsored by Heritage Homecraft, and I miss Tommy too.
Thanks, friend.
The daily dose of kindness I mentioned earlier this week is in memory of Travis's late son, Tommy. And so I think it's appropriate to mention it again today in light of your commentary. This is for Tommy. An extraordinary Maryland teacher has received top honors for her lesson plans. CBS's Jan Crawford has the story.
Go through your binder, take out a sheet of paper.
Growing up poor in Jamaica, Kashia Thorpe never thought she would graduate college.
Exactly.
Let alone become a visionary high school English teacher and win a $1 million prize.
Kashia Thorpe from the United States of America.
Working with immigrant and refugee students, the Maryland educator and track coach just won the Global Teacher Prize, beating out 8,000 others from 121 countries.
Because I am an immigrant and because I understand their story, I do not ever lower my expectations for my students. I let them rise to my expectations.
And they do.
And they do.
And through her foundation, the former track star at Howard University has helped hundreds of students get college scholarships or mentoring, like senior Issa Tue Babb.
I know she's always going to be here for me, and I will make her proud.
Teaching just is not something that happens in the classroom. Be their coaches, be their mentor, be that safe space for them.
Thorpe says she'll use her winnings to help even more students.
This award, in many ways, is just the beginning.
It's just the beginning.
Inspiring others to dream big, too. Jan Crawford, CBS News, Bladensburg, Maryland.
Welcome back to Cairo Radio. Look, you know, you love the G and Ursula show weekdays 9 to noon on Cairo Radio. So we are lucky to get G Scott a little early. G, I know we want to talk about college football, but I have to start with this story that I cannot get enough of this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Chocolate orange mayonnaise. This is a real thing. I'm not making this up. They're selling this. Heinz is making this. You're going to spread this on something?
Mm-hmm. I look at it as the same people that would like this are the same people that look forward to green bean casserole on Thanksgiving.
Or put raisins
in
the potato
salad. No way, I like green bean casserole, but the idea of this just does not work.
Sully, I'm shocked.
Are you kidding me?
You like green bean casserole. You wouldn't look like you would like green bean casserole.
Well, Holly makes a really good fresh green bean casserole.
The crunchy onions.
She added bacon this year, too.
Oh, bacon.
The cream of onion soup.
Was there cream in there, too?
Cream of onion soup, that's the base.
How different can it be?
Because it's not chocolate orange and mayonnaise.
So it's a no from everybody.
I'd be willing to try it on a piece of toast, but I don't think I could put it on much else.
I mean, like, they say croissants are like bakery items, but then it's like just Nutella, isn't it? That's a little greasier.
Yeah, I get. Yeah, thinner and less sweet. It feels like it would be a mouthful of orange fat.
Yeah. Mayonnaise, right? It's a no for me.
Like, it would just like coat your mouth.
Don't be
like
their PR person, because that's actually quite, that just puts it right in perspective.
Wait. You like the orange fat part?
No, I mean, that's a great description. I'd be like, put that on the billboard. It's not telling you what it is. Just go a glob of orange fat.
Yeah, it just tastes like bad breath.
Don't worry. It's targeted to people in the UK. Chocolate oranges are a big thing there, so you're not going to see it in stores around here. But no. We do want to talk college football. Mm. I mean, it feels like chaotic. Sully was in here this morning talking about all the crazy things. A lot of coaches hopping around. But it really does feel like it's the players that are just like all over the place at this moment. Lots going on.
Mm. So finally, it's fair now, right?
Yeah, right.
Finally, it's been a year now that the players are allowed to go and do something. But the coaches this entire time, since the very beginning, have been allowed to leave. They've been allowed to come into your living room and say to mom and dad, we love your son. We love your daughter. We're going to take care of them. This is the place to be. We look forward to you. And then they go ahead and they lie to the families.
Right.
Meanwhile, they're getting ready to take another job elsewhere, which is fine. This is the United States of America. We just got to quit hiding with the term student athlete. Mm. I'm gonna break this to you. I know some of you guys are going to be upset. Are you ready for this? Listen, when these college football players that you see out there on the field, trust me, they're going to school to play football. They are not going to school for school. There is hardly no school. You get a little bit of tutoring just to make it look good, and then you go out there. Let's be real. College, you guys are not going to like this. It's a scam anyways. People learn more on YouTube than you do in some of these college classes. So I know that there's a lot of people like, but they get the education. It's all a front. It's not real.
I need to
it's
sit down.
All about money. It is. You mean to tell me it's about education when the college, listen to me, the college professor makes under $100,000 a year while the football coach makes $100 million student athlete? What?
Hey, I'm still paying out of state tuition.
You've been scammed,
and they love you for it.
Yeah, exactly. My boy to get on scholarship. But, he's earned it, but you know.
Here's the crazy part. There's one of those things where if you're an alumni, let's just say you're listening right now, and you get the letters from your school, and they want you to donate. They're asking you to donate. Some of y'all still got student loans. And the university is making money hand over the fence, and they're asking you to donate your little pennies to that university.
I used to, when I would get those calls, read my latest statement back to them on the phone. I'd be like, oh, well, I still owe $15,011. Do you want to make that up for me? And then I'll give to you.
Yes.
And so I'm sure I'm going to get messages, and I usually do. And people get mad at me when I talk about what college is.
No, we love you.
And the truth of the matter is this. Whatever your job is that you're doing currently right now, I'm going to ask you this. How much did you learn how to do your job that you're doing now in college?
None.
Then what are we paying for then?
The experience, the prestige on your resume.
We're paying for the, you must have a bachelor's degree to apply.
Where else am I going to take French architecture of the 18th century? I mean, that's why you go to college.
I apologize for getting in here and being so emotional.
I love
but
it.
This topic right here, because there is this idea that these young men and women are just going to school and they're in the classroom and it's so hard, and it's not. And you cannot major in what you want to major in. You can't take the classes that you want to take. Why? Because you're at practice for at least 8 hours a day. You're not practicing for 2 hours. No, it's over. Tommy is practicing all day long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't have time for school.
He does, but that's why he's failing calculus. God bless him. He's trying his best. He's trying his best, but he's just,
that's real,
you know, he's
Sully.
Trying.
Here's
you know,
the truth, though. His future employer is not going to know that.
No.
No.
You know what my son's future employer is going to be wanting to talk about? He's going to ask about his grades.
No.
He's going to ask about, oh my gosh, you went to the Ohio State? They want to talk football.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do the eye test for me.
And he's going to get any job he wants.
Yeah.
He can get any job he wants because he played football.
Save this fire for G and Ursula coming up at 9 o'clock.
The time here at the Cairo Studios, 7:16 in the morning on a pre-Friday. With the first U.S. case of Omicron variant confirmed in California, health officials in our state reminding everyone to follow the safety measures, but not to panic. Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott is here with the local pandemic update. Hannah, good morning.
Good morning, Travis. Yes, the state's public health lab, as well as researchers at the University of Washington, they're on the hunt for that new strain here in Washington, Omicron, using genomic sequencing. We're very good at that here in this state, and that puts us ahead of the game, they say. It's a process that about 10% of the cases go through. Virologist Pavitra Rotrautri is heading up that effort at the UW and says it is so far so good.
That process takes a few days at least, and it's a highly batched process, and that's what leads to that lag of between 1 to 2 weeks in most labs.
So it takes a little while for us to figure it out. That's why we're in this bit of a holding pattern. But she says the bottom line is this.
It needs to be seen, obviously, but I think that it is probably already here. It's likely at pretty low frequency right now, given that we haven't picked it up in samples from, you know, the last couple of weeks. So I think it's a matter of time, given how connected the world is, given how much travel has been occurring over the last few weeks and months.
She says the good news is
our ability to sequence a large number of samples every week has certainly bolstered that confidence that we will find this variant. Add to that this other PCR-based test that we can use to also screen for this particular mutation that occurs in a majority of these genomes. That's another tool that we can use. So we're in a much better place in terms of just our ability to find these in our lab. And I think this is similarly true for labs across the country and across the world. Having said that, there's also a lot of, disparity in both genomic surveillance as well as vaccination across the globe.
So there's always kind of that wild card, but we are, for instance, in a much better shape than we were a year ago when a new variant might show up, that kind of thing. We'll get a better handle on it probably sooner. She says while this news of this new variant and all of the uncertainty around it can be unsettling, it's important to know.
We have to remember that even though we're hearing about this new variant, Omicron, 99.9% of all sequences remain Delta, and Delta is a formidable virus, and so we have to remember that. And while we panic about potential new variants in the future, we still have to deal with the one that is currently circulating widely in the population.
And we really heard that same thing from our state health secretary, Dr. Umar Shah, yesterday as they gave an update on the situation.
We have plenty of reason to be concerned about what is in front of us, which is the Delta variant. And that includes doing all the things that we need to do in order to fight not just the Omicron variant or whatever variant comes our way, but the current Delta variant in our state, which includes getting vaccinated. There are a lot of things that we don't know about this new variant, but what we do know.
But he does note is this.
We know that primary vaccines are so critical, meaning if you have not gotten vaccinated, this is the time to get vaccinated yourself. This is also a time to get your kids vaccinated. We know now 5 to 11-year-olds are also eligible for vaccines, and we've had incredible interest in the state of Washington, and we want to continue to have our kids get vaccinated as well.
So really continuing to beat that drum that we've heard since the beginning of the pandemic, but also stressing this part.
Finally, we want to emphasize boosters. And I think this is a key message for all of us as well. The boosters are so critical because we know that over time you have some loss of the effectiveness of vaccines, just the way vaccines are designed. That is not a knock against vaccines. That is exactly how vaccines work for childhood vaccines that all of us got when we were kids. That's how it works for other vaccines. And this COVID-19 set of vaccines that we have are no different. They start off with a primary vaccination, and you need to get a booster to continue to get the protection that we all need.
So So a lot of the same stuff that we've been hearing all the time, but they're really stressing not to panic, not to buy into some of the things you might hear, because they just don't know yet. So the only thing that you can do at this moment is to be vaccinated, get the booster, and protect yourself, especially around the holidays, right? So if you're around people, do all of those protection measures that probably seem so old to all of us at this point, but follow them. That's how you're going to protect yourself and your loved ones.
Right. Keep wearing the mask, washing your hands, singing the ABCs, making sure that you're fully vaccinated.
All of that good stuff. Yep.
All right. Hannah, thank you very much.
You bet.
I'm Travis Mayfield sitting in for Dave Ross this morning. Coming to Climate Pledge Arena on Saturday, it's Gonzaga versus Alabama, the battle in Seattle. It's the first time the two basketball teams have actually played each other. It's also the first college basketball game at the new arena. So we called up Gonzaga University President Thane McCullough. Thane, thanks for being here this morning with us.
Good morning. How are you, Travis?
Very well, thank you. I know you're taking time from your travel schedule to talk to us. This is the first battle in Seattle since 2015. Was there ever a question in your mind that this would continue?
Not really. We were really hoping we could come back to Seattle and do this again. And, of course, it's been a great tradition for a lot of Zags who live in the Seattle area, as well as those who travel. So we're happy to be returning.
And what a cool opportunity to be the first college basketball game played in the new Climate Pledge Arena.
Yeah, I didn't realize that that was the case, but we are super excited to know that as well.
Also, you know, you have hired this new athletic director, right? So this is the first battle that he's going to have. What kind of conversations have you been having with your new athletic director?
Well, you know, this has been an amazing an experience, but we're really, really lucky. Chris Dandiford, as our new athletic director, is not new to the athletic program. He's been part of that for really over 30 years, and so he's seen an awful lot of the history of Gonzaga athletics, and so for him, this is a return as well.
But he gets to lead the charge this time, which has got to be pretty cool.
Absolutely. And there's no question at all, especially during this very strange time that we've all been living through with the COVID pandemic and the challenges that that's brought to college athletics all across the country, to be able to return and have the opportunity to play in front of fans, especially in such an amazing venue as Climate Pledge, is going to be really exciting to be a part of.
Has it felt a little more normal on campus? I mean, I saw the video of the tents pitched outside the arena with the students waiting. You know, the traditions are back. Does it feel more normal to you?
Well, it certainly feels a lot more like pre-COVID. There's obviously always a lot of concern about, you know, how this is all going to move, but the students are super excited to be back. We've been really grateful for the compliance of fans with our protocols, and, you know, we've actually been having quite a lot of fun on campus this fall and the start of this season.
I have to ask you a serious question. Rocky start to the season for your coach, pulled over for DUI. He's taken responsibility for this, done all the right things, in my opinion. So my question for you is, it feels like this chapter is really behind us, can focus and move forward on the season.
Yeah, I think that Coach Few is, you know, he's put the words to it himself. I mean, there's a lot of remorse and a lot of frustration over everything that went down there. He has been consistent about saying, you know, he recognizes the responsibility he has as a role model, as a member of the community, and he certainly wants to do everything possible to show people that this is a really unfortunate situation that is indeed going to be in the past. So we're grateful for, you know, all the support that he's received, and I, you know, really understand, you know, deeply his regret, but we're certainly hoping that we can put the chapter behind us and move forward.
That's what I love about Gonzaga University, learning from the past, but always looking forward with a positive take on things and giving people the second chances and really working to make our community better. Gonzaga University President Thane McCullough, thank you very much for taking time for us this morning. We're excited to have a big old Zag weekend this weekend with the battle in Seattle.
Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to the show's podcast. We're happy you're here.
And you can keep up with the show and find some of the stories from today online at MyNorthWest.com.